good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series. We have episode number 229, and about 3.5 months after we initially started chatting with each other, maybe 4 or 5, I can't remember for sure, really excited to have on Tim Kapstra, the Brooklyn Nets radio color commentator. Really excited to have Tim on here today. But before we get to Tim, we want to recognize our founding sponsor, Kosak Chiropractic, located at 14450 Eagle Run Drive here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, have them go see Kosak Chiropractic. Look up their practice at kosakchiro.com. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, download, rate, review, say good things, 5 stars, write stuff, I don't know, Spotify, all those different things. When you do that, we gain momentum in the ratings, we move up, people want to look up Coaching Basketball Podcast, that slides us up the scales there, so please do that if you would. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me at penandanapkin@gmail.com. Enough of that stuff. Mr. Kapstra, how are things on the East Coast today?
They're doing well, and I tell you what, boy, you can spit it out. You are impressed. Are you an auctioneer on the weekends? Holy crap! Holy smokes!
I am a teacher, so I got to make a little extra money somehow, Tim.
Well, you know, I tell you what, you can do play by play. Yeah, you get play by play, and you can handle fast breaks. You can handle anything up tempo. You can hang with anybody the way you were talking right there. I was fired up.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's high praise from a guy who's done it for about 3 decades. So greatly appreciated. So really excited to have Tim on here today. It's going to be a lot of fun. A little bit less traditional podcast than what I normally do, but I think we've got a lot of really, really good things to chat about. We're going to talk a little NBA. We're going to talk a little bit about Tim's time with the Nets. Kind of talk about the Nets in the future here, maybe a little bit. Maybe we'll talk a little NBA Finals. So I don't know. We'll just see where everything goes here. But Tim, for folks that are unfamiliar with your basketball journey, let's kind of start here the way we normally do. Tell us a little bit about your basketball journey and what you've done with the game.
Well, I went to Wagner College out in Staten Island. It's from upstate New York, small town. Ended up by New York City, and I was pretty good at every sport, but not great at any of them. But I was going to be maybe a college football player, maybe somewhere, and then I was going to be a baseball. And I ended up playing baseball and basketball at Wagner College, and just had in Staten Island and. I was a walk-on in basketball and just fell in love with the game, fell in love with it. Didn't know about that you could become a coach, but then the opportunity arose right after that. Got into it. Right after school. I was 21 years old. I was an assistant coach at Wagner. Then went up to Siena College when I was still really young. And at 25 years old, we had 4 really great years then. And went to the NCAA tournament. It was really good, and then came back to Wagner. Now, I was the head coach at 29 years old. 29, 30, yeah, there's 29 years old, I was the head coach. So I had a 10-year run there. So I was one of the youngest head coaches to ever, you know, coach in, you know, lower Division I, but still pretty impressive, you know, to be
Absolutely
able to get that job. But I was one of the youngest, but I was also one of the youngest to be fired after a 10-year span also. So you don't want to be cocky, you know what I mean? So I did have a run. I was there for 10 years, you know, and I liked it. I didn't like it. I loved it. And yet I loved it when it was going well, and then it wasn't going well. And then you're just kind of hanging in there. But each week in New York, they would have these weekly luncheons. And maybe when I first started going there, Lou Carnesecca would speak, maybe Bill Raftery, PJ Cole, some of the New York legendary coaches. And what would happen then is I started going there is I would speak at these luncheons. And then I think a couple of times that's kind of funny, there's a lot of pressure on you to be funny every week and doing this. So as my career went on, I would do that all the time. People would say, "Hey, listen, your coaching thing isn't going great right now, but I can definitely see you in broadcasting." So I said, I kind of kept that in the back of my mind. And as my, you know, and I was, I'm one of the few guys that doesn't think he got screwed over by his athletic director. A lot of guys resign. I deserve to be fired. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. They gave me every opportunity. It was more than fair. And yet I prepared. I would do some NCAA tournament shows, different things like that. And then I was able to get my foot in the door on TV because I wasn't a big name guy from Wagner College. It's not like I coaching at UCLA and to give you an ESPN job. So I had to really kind of work it for a number of years, you know, and then I would train kids on the side, teach them. And then, but I would practice my broadcasting, go anywhere. I would volunteer anywhere, do anything you can. And that's what I tell young people in broadcasting or really in any career. If you have a passion and you want to do something, just get out there and do it. Don't worry about, you know, it's not a money thing. Just go and do it. And I got reps and I got better and I got better and I got better. And I was teaching kids in a clinic and I was doing good, you know, pretty good things, like Atlantic 10, doing this, doing college games. And then as it turned out, the New Jersey Nets job came available. And I had great timing. You know, timing's everything. Mike Breen, who we know really well on the NBA Finals, and he's so popular now, his son was in my clinic. He knew that I would have it. Nobody knew me at the New Jersey Nets. I hadn't even watched an NBA game in a number of years. I mean, I watched the finals and the playoffs everybody. When you're a college coach, you don't even do that. So that's how. And then there was a weird opening. And they said, hey, well, we'll try this guy out. You know, we'll try him out. And then I came in there, got my foot in the door. And for now, that was 22 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I really don't have that many. I have no awards. You know, I have no, like, you know, I don't got any Emmys or anything. But the one thing I got is I haven't missed a game in 22 years. Why would you want to? But yeah. I've been lucky. I got right on the button, 1,900 in a row that wow. I've done of. Well, I do some TV. Like, I'm like the third, fourth TV guy. I do like four games this year mm-hmm. for the YES Network with the Brooklyn Nets. But really, it's radio and just the luckiest guy you ever met. So that's kind of that is my life, Marty, right there in a nutshell, right there.
Awesome.
There it is. Awesome. That's how I got into it. And I'm like a lot of guys, and why I love the game. I love studying the game. And I've been a fan of yours for a while because a buddy of mine, Brian Dillon, turned me on to it. Because it is the best name of a basketball, not necessarily website or Twitter handle or whatever, and now your podcast, when you post things, I could never relate to it more than a pen and a napkin, you know? Like, I know everybody now has all the graphics and all these things on there. But there's nothing like it. And it really made me think of, time in New Jersey diners. You know, New Jersey's famous for diners where I'm at. And, like, being with, you know, the likes of, the Mike Fratellos of the world or the Bill Raftery's or the, you know, the New York, you know, UB Browns. And, you know, maybe that, you know, they had the salt and pepper shakers going all over. Sure. And then the napkins and a pen and a napkin. And maybe try this on out of bounds and doing this. And that's. So I'm fired up to be here because of that. And it really stuck out to me, the pen and the napkin. I just loved it. It's our life. So right there, people can judge my age. I'm a little bit older, but not that old. So, but, you know.
Seasoned and experienced, Tim. Seasoned and experienced. We don't use the O word.
I don't know. Yeah, that's okay.
No.
That's it. That's my world right there. That's where I'm at. So that's where I'm starting from.
And those napkins are hand done, every single one of them. There's no computer program. That's my third grade level handwriting there, all scratched out for everybody to see. So,
you know, something also, and you know, but all broadcasters, almost all broadcasters, they make sure they write down everything about players as opposed to doing a lot of, some do it on a computer, some.
Sure.
But a lot of people I talk to, if you write it down, like you write it down on your napkins.
Yep.
It sticks in your brain a lot easier.
Yes, it does. Absolutely. So, yep. What do you miss most about the day-to-day coaching?
I miss practice, you know, I miss practice. I miss, getting into, you know, in the gym. It's been a while now, and my situation just broadcasting makes it great because you get to do all the strategy or talk a lot about the game, have a lot of fun, but you don't get the, you don't, it's not personal. Mm-hmm. I could say I Brooklyn Nets players or NBA players, I know some of them, mm-hmm. and I've met them, and they know who I am, and they've talked to me, but you don't have a personal relationship. I think that's what you really miss, you know, mm-hmm. and also having to, like, you coached a long time. I mean, big wins on the road, right? Yeah. In a hostile environment.
Yeah.
And, you know, that feeling is so fun. The bus rides home, the feeling of that. And yet, you know, you also remember, you know, it's tough too. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it wasn't all that smooth of a ride, but the relationships, people keeping in touch with me now, ex-players and stuff like that, that's what you miss, because it's special, you know, sports coaching. That's what it brings out. And that's really what you miss.
Mm-hmm. You're running a summer camp here. Oh shit. Tim, tell us a little bit about the basketball camps that you'll be running here in the next few weeks.
I run camps all summer in New Jersey, you know, and it's gone from about seven different weeks of basketball camp there in Wayne, New Jersey. I have a really good time. Great having staff back there. But I got to admit, Marty, it's not like we used to do it, like out on the it's more recreational than I remember. You know, I remember just digging in, playing defense, doing defensive slides, going to stations. I'm into, like, hey, let's keep them happy here. Let's keep them happy. A lot more younger kids than as time has gone on. So we do a great job of having a great day of basketball, teach a ton of shooting. Really like to work on shooting, because who doesn't want to do that?
Yep.
And it ends up being a good enjoyable day, but it's gotten younger. And because once they get to, you know, kind of like high school, the high school kids want to go to their camps or they go away. So we're not afraid to be pretty good with 7, 8, 9, 10 year olds, and do a good job with them. Get them to love the game, so you can't overdo it, and you want to make it fun.
Yeah. A lot of people run basketball camps, but I think it's really, really cool as a guy who, I mean, I've done, obviously the podcast, but I've also done a little bit of high school sports broadcasting, you know, state tournament basketball and things like that. You do a sports broadcasting camp. Where did the inspiration come for that? What goes all into it? How do you put all that? That's a really, really cool thing. I think that's really, really unique, Tim, what you do with that.
Yeah, it's really enjoyable. Do it with a few guys over here at Montclair State University, and they have a beautiful communication center. It is really enjoyable. The kids come in for a week. They don't stay there. Well, they come in from all over the country though, because it's really enjoyable. Different guys did it throughout the years. Ian Eagles had the camp. I worked with him. Different guys, and the kids just learn all the basics of broadcasting. But even if they never broadcast, the fact that you get up and you have to learn how to, we make them speak in front of people. Learn how to speak slow. Learn how to speak louder. Speak to the back of the room. The power of pausing when you speak publicly. Then you get them on teleprompter. You get them on camera. They do sports reports. They do stand-ups. They do interviews. They call games. We go to a minor league baseball game. It's a heck of a week. It's a really good week for kids. They really enjoy it. And a number of guys have gone on to broadcasting careers, but I don't know of anybody who it hasn't helped or they hadn't had a fun time. You also bring in, you know, when you're close to New York, you got a lot of, guys that are willing to come over and speak at your camp and different people. So it's quite enjoyable.
Awesome.
Thanks for asking.
If folks want to know more about how to sign up for your summer camp or the sports broadcasting camp, how do they find out about it?
Well, the sports broadcasting camp, that's what it's called, sports broadcasting camp. That's online. Unless you're in New Jersey or coming to New Jersey, Tim Capstraw Basketball Camp in Wayne, New Jersey. But But, you know, it's more of a local kind of thing. You know, the broadcasting thing could be people that from all over. But, the local New Jersey people that listen to the podcast, it's in Wayne, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, it is official. October 12th and 13th, Saturday and Sunday, October 12th and 13th, 2024, will be our first annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Retreat. It is going to be over 24 hours of just basketball coaching and getting yourself primed and ready for the upcoming season. We're going to do a lot of different things. Coach Flannery and the staff at Creighton University have been gracious enough to allow us to come in and watch them practice that day. We're going to have roundtable sessions with coaches that you're attending the clinic with, which is one of the best aspects of any A Pen and a Napkin event. We're going to have a full timeout situation score group discussion with the coaches that are attending, as well as coaches social, and then, of course, guest speakers. We got some great coaches lined up right now. We're probably going to be adding a couple of more here. It is going to be a great, great weekend here in Omaha. We'll be staying at the Holiday Inn Express at 87th and West Dodge Road here in Omaha, and it is really, really affordable. $200 for the weekend, and that includes food, that includes your lodging at the hotel, drinks, everything that goes into it. It is going to be included in that $200 for well over 24 hours worth of activities. If you're a commuter, if you're living in the Omaha area and you want to join in, but you don't want to stay at the hotel, it's $125. Think of that. That's literally $5-6 an hour for an entire weekend of becoming a better coach. So coaches, I encourage you to sign up as soon as you can for the first annual A Pen and a Napkin Fall Coaches Retreat. Obviously, Tim, you are very heavily involved in the NBA, and there's a lot of eyeballs on the game. But the vast majority of coaches that are watching those games are not professional coaches. They're lower level coaches. They could be, you know, it could be elementary, it could be junior high, all these different things and that type of thing. But if you were to give advice to a high school coach, let's say high school or below, or just the average high school varsity assistant, varsity head coach, what are some things that they should be looking for as they're watching an NBA game or as the finals roll out here the next few days and a couple of weeks? What should they be watching for that you think are really, really applicable things that, yes, these are the best players in the world, but here are things that you can pick up as the game goes along or aspects of the game that you should be really looking to apply to your high school program or your JV team here or whatever it may be?
That's a great question. And I think what stands out to me is when you watch the games, I think if you're at a high school game or a high school coach in the NBA, they do not let the best player dominate the game. I'm very, you know, I'm always thinking to myself, boy, if I'm coaching high school, I'm sure someday I'd love to even sit and be an assistant with somebody. You know, teach how to double team and rotate. Don't let one player there's usually one or two great players on a team. If he gets it going or you want to stop him, rotate to him, teach how to trap and frustrate him, then don't let him get the ball. If you're trying to win the game, you don't have to be nice about it, but that stands out to me a lot. Watch the defensive strategies that are used on guys that are – that are excellent players. They may double immediately as a guy dribbles across half court. They may drill. A team may call a play. If they're a team that just runs plays, you might, on the first pass, just double team the first pass and disrupt the flow of the offense. I think that's where I see, or a player that's, again, exceptional player. The ball's thrown him, closest guy, go and double. Next, everybody rotate up. If you're coaching girls basketball, I would be incredibly aggressive with that because the ball would take a long time to get to the other side of the floor. You could get in. You could get after people. You would see this, and I tell people this all the time. In an NBA game, they're always saying weak, weak, weak out front, or they're pushing. You know what weak means? They're pushing to their weaker hand. Mm-hmm. That's one of the big things you hear. NBA players got a strong hand and a weak hand offensively. Well, what do you think a high school kid has? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He has.
Oh, absolutely.
The difference of, like, shading to their left hand or the, all right, their weak hand. And playing that and then waiting for the ball to get crossed over and then digging at it and stripping it, that is right there, forcing everything to the weak sides. Watch, and then teams will watch, you know, the tendencies of their opponent, you know? How many teams are really just right-handed? You can sit on their right hand, passing, dribbling, things like that. I think that on the defensive side, offensively, it's a little bit, more difficult because, you know, yeah. You see so much, the guys are so good one-on-one right now that if they can target a player, they do a lot of that. I mean, but there are great things you can steal. There are great side out of bounds. There are great underneath out of bounds. There are plays you can run, but I think I would be more likely to look at it, you know, look at it more from the defensive side. I think that would be more helpful to coaches because they might not have the individual one-on-one skill that would allow all the one-on-one and space. I know the space is really important and shooting is really important. A high school coach might not have what an NBA coach has on that side of the floor. But defensively, those are a couple ideas that just jump quickly in my head.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big big things that you see online is they'll say, hey, you know, Brooklyn Nets run this and this, and Mikal Bridges does this. Well, it's great, but I don't have Mikal Bridges, you know? And so,
right.
But I think you can adapt it a little bit. Here's this thing here. And instead of spacing all the way out to the corner three, your kid can shoot the 15 footer from the baseline or the free throw line extender or whatever it may be. It's just all about, in my mind, it's just all about the adaptation of what you're seeing at that level. That's my opinion. I don't know. What do you think, Tim?
I think so. Although you've been personally involved. It has helped me that my daughter has played in high school recently, and now she plays in college. Mm-hmm. I think, but there are things you can. The amazing thing about basketball is how much it's adjusted and changed. I think you need to in high school. The term the possession game. You got to win the possession game.
Yeah.
Can you commit less turnovers? And force more turnovers. Can you commit less turnovers than the other team? Or the other way to look, can you force more turnovers than the opposition? And here's the big adjustment you've seen in the NBA over the last several years. Used to be 15 years ago, on a shot, everybody was into like immediately sprinting back. Maybe one player would go for an offensive rebound. The offensive rebound has become a big deal in NBA basketball now. That, you know, crashing from the corners, who's going and who's going after it. And it keeps on evolving, you know, like what's being run right now in the NBA won't be, it'll keep changing next year. So other new ideas will come in. Mm-hmm. But I think that's another part if you were talking to high school, are you going to win the possession game? Mm-hmm. Can you take care of the ball better? And can you get more shots up because you are really working on the offensive glass and getting after it? Mm-hmm. The rebounding, you know, do you have an assistant coach whose one job can be during practice? Just watch, are they attacking the backboard? Are they forming a triangle? Are they understanding to pursue the basketball off the backboard? Yeah, stuff like that. I think that's how you can, since what the NBA does, and I think it's something that high school coaches could benefit from, college coaches, any coaches, understanding to try to win the possession game. See if you get more shots and obviously more good shots than your opponent.
Yep. Let's go. Let's go back in the a little bit in the Wayback Machine. 1,900 consecutive games, so you've gotten to see a lot of really, really good coaches operate. And we're going to stay in the Nets silo here. So I picked out six coaches from the Nets in their run here, and I just wanted you to talk about just some of the great things that you saw these guys do. as they were roaming the sidelines, either in East Rutherford or Brooklyn here. So we ready to go with this, Tim?
Sure, whatever you need.
Byron Scott.
Byron Scott provided a toughness. You know, he had a toughness. And here's the benefit of, you know, I had Jason Kidd arrive, but he had a real toughness about him and a stoicness of that I thought was really, really beneficial to the group. I thought he did a really good job in that manner, and he brought a lot of credibility because he was a Showtime Laker and all that. So that's kind of what stands out to me with him.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence Frank.
Incredibly prepared. Incredible. Great story. I mean, anybody, Lawrence Frank was, didn't, I don't know if he made his high school team. So he goes to Indiana and he's a manager. Yep. Now you hear of managers making the move into coaching a lot more, but I think he might have been one of the original guys to do it.
Yep.
You know, like all the way from college. I think he almost kind of broke through. I didn't know of anybody before that. He's an amazing story. Now he's a Clippers president of whatever basketball. And just how prepared he was, how he would you know, outwork people. He just kind of wore people down. And when players see you working hard, it really matters. And he's a great guy. And what a story, though. It doesn't matter who you are, what your background is. I'll say this about NBA players, too. They care a lot less about where you came from than how good you are. They can tell in about 2 minutes if you're a really good coach or a great coach, and you can help them. And I think he's a great example of that because he was never really a player, and then he was a manager. But he just, you know, they could tell when he was an assistant coach that he really knew his stuff. So he gained a lot of credibility.
Yep. Lionel Hollins.
I didn't know him as well. That was quick. Mm-hmm. I thought he was, and I just watched him because I was just watching the Bill Walton special, watching him play for the Portland Trail Blazers. You know, I was old enough to know that he was watching him play. I thought he was, I enjoyed going to his practice, though. It reminded me of, I don't know, a lot of the stuff we were doing. I just thought he had bad timing, but I think he's got a good reputation as a coach.
Mm-hmm. Jason Kidd.
I think he is so much fun for me to watch right now. Mm-hmm. I think he was given the job because he was Jason Kidd, but I think it's hard. Mm-hmm. I think being a coach is hard, and you think you can do it, and it's hard. And mm-hmm. I really know it was hard. It was hard. Not everybody can do it. You think you can because you're watching it, and everybody's critical, and yet he had to learn it. And what I love about Jason Kidd was, didn't go great. He got another opportunity in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Went better, but not great. What's he do? Becomes an assistant coach with the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And now he's with the Dallas Mavericks, and I think he's a terrific coach. He's got great poise. He never gets flustered. I think that's what stands out to me, too, in the last 30 since 2000 or so. I love the fact that it's not cool to be nuts on the sidelines anymore. I don't know if you evolved, Marty, as a coach.
I did.
I was absolutely nuts because I thought that, and I thought that's what you probably should do as a coach.
Yeah.
And I love that it's kind of turned into, no, you got to be controlled. You got to be poised, you know, and all that screaming and yelling you do, you can do it occasionally and it might be helpful.
Yeah.
But you got to pick your spots, but to have that be your entire act is not healthy for anybody. And I thought Jason Kidd has great poise. He also has enough confidence in trusting his assistant coaches, I think. You know, I don't know that for a fact. I just get that because he's Jason Kidd.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got one guy that's great, Sean Sweeney, who's his defensive coach. And he's not like he doesn't have – and I've learned that over the years. So if I'm talking to coaches right now, I think nobody cares how you get it done. Just if you're an assistant coach, well, you selected the and he's a great coach. It's okay to let him have a lot of juice.
Yeah.
I think, but that guy's got to understand how to do it too. He can't be like doing it in a manner that doesn't make, you know, makes the head coach look awkward or anything like that. But you, and I think Jason Kidd does that. I think he utilizes his staff really, really well.
Mm-hmm. No, I was definitely, you know, animated would be a good word as a younger coach. And one time my dad came and watched me coach, and my dad's pretty low key. He's very low key. But he, you know, after the game, we're kind of talking about it, and he just kind of does this in kind of my dad's way. He says, "Got a question for you." I'm like, "Okay." He goes, "When you were an assistant," I was an assistant for 10 years before, 10 of my first 11 years coaching, I was an assistant. He goes, "When you're an assistant coach, you sat there pretty analytical, watched the game, analyzed the game, that type of stuff. Now you're a head coach and you're pacing and you're standing and you're doing this and you're demonstrative. You know, what's the difference?" Yeah. And I'm like, God, I mean, that hit me like a thunderbolt, you know?
And so I
really became very self-conscious about it after that. I mean, it's your dad, and he meant it in a very loving way. Like, he just wanted me to be as good as I could be. And when I got back into it a few years ago, that's one thing I really, really worked on was, I'm just going to sit here. I really kind of modeled some of that after like a Brad Stevens, you know, I'm gonna do my best. Now your stomach's churning inside and all these other things, and you're nervous. But I think that's without a doubt, I can say with a lot of confidence that that's something I got a lot better at as my career moved forward with that. And you know, so I felt really good about that. But I agree with you there that just the more seasoned and experienced I got, it was all right. I've pretty much done all I can until tonight. You know, the ball is tipped off. I'll throw in a few things, but now it's time for the kids to take over. And I really tried to take a look at it like that. And for better or worse, that's the way I tried to look at it.
Yeah, it's great. And it's really evolved, you know, like, because I'm 63 years old. So I went from, you know, 1990s, you know, 80s, 90s. It was nuts. I worked for guys that were nuts. And I can be high strung anyways. So I'm just like a maniac. And it was, I just think Brad Stevens is a great example. Phil Jackson was a good example of being controlled and being, and it doesn't work. The players don't play harder for you when you're going crazy. Mm-hmm. I will say, and it reminds me, one thing I've picked up from NBA coaches and that I think can help is that almost all of them are really, positive or confident.
Yes.
They've tried to build confidence in shooting. Like they don't like rip, like they try to work on what's a good shot, what's a bad shot, this, but they don't want anybody not to feel confident when they're shooting the basketball. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know what I mean? They build confidence. Mm-hmm. And that always stood out to me too, mm-hmm. that almost every coach I watch, I know it's the NBA and I know it's that, but not everybody's a great shooter there, but they build an awful lot of confidence with their guys.
One thing I really like is when they go inside the huddle and they do those things. And I get it. You get limited access. And I'm, you know, obviously not every huddle is kumbaya and let's hold hands and, man, we just love each other, that type of thing. But that's one thing I really noticed. And I remember distinctly one time writing down in my notes, NBA huddles, meaning in my brain, or the way it worked in my brain was, even if things are going poorly, you've got to find a way to spin it positively. Your kids can look up and see that you're getting your butt kicked by 15 points. Okay, how are we going to dig our way out of it? You know, and if they're playing hard and they're concentrating, that's, to me, those are the two biggest things you can ask of your kids. And at that point, then it's up to you to kind of, okay, hey, let's stay with it. Let's, you know, and a lot of times we get frustrated. So then we bring that out on the kids where it's like, no, hey, let's, you know, now again, the two ways that, and I was pretty open about this when I was coaching, that the social contract is you play hard and you're concentrating to the best of your ability. If you're doing those two things, then I could coach you. But if you're not, then that's where the rub is. And I think that's one of the things that I really noticed from getting in, you know, those television broadcasts of guys in the huddle and being positive in that regard.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's phony. I mean, I do think it's. But you're not hearing the whole huddle.
Sure.
You know what I mean? They have to, but it's not, that doesn't work either. You know, these guys, they'll tune you out. You've got to be poised, controlled, direct, and not. And again, they don't spend the whole time talking either. You know, they meet with each other. And I don't know if coaches can do that. And I don't know if that's necessary, but it's not. I guess I read something. If you say three things, you don't say anything. Yep. You got to make sure you're getting your main point across. What you need to get done. Maybe other assistants are talking to them before you come into the huddle. But when you come in there, you've got to get your main point or maybe 2 points, and then that's it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Otherwise, I think you can say too much.
Yep.
And then the kids can't handle it that way either. So
paralysis by analysis.
Yeah, I just think there can be, there obviously is too much. So I think that's a lot, you know, I was wondering what we might get into coaching-wise, because I'm thinking, you know, I haven't coached that much, but these are all the things I witness all the time.
Yeah.
And they're really important, you know?
Yep.
You almost should have somebody videotape you on the sideline. You know what I mean? Like, with their phone and watch how your mannerisms are during a game. Mm-hmm. And look to see, are you portraying a positive, not positive, nothing phony, but you know what I mean? You don't want to have a negative body language. You don't want to be emotional on shots. You don't want to do that. I remember hearing that Mike Krzyzewski did that with Bobby Hurley, would just have somebody videotape him this 100 years ago because he had his body language wasn't great. Young Bobby Hurley. Mm-hmm. And that was really helpful to him. I think coaches do a little bit of the same thing now also. And I think that's really helpful. It could be helpful.
Yeah. Oh, know. No. I would, as I was rewatching our game film, I would, sneak a peek at myself, you know, and, right. I would watch our bench. I would, you know, hey, how's
sure.
our, you know, we called it bench energy, you know, and Mary makes a play. Hey, we better be up and getting up and getting after it. When Susie comes out of the game, is everybody getting up off the bench and giving her a high five and, hey, great job and that type of thing. You know, we were very conscientious of how our bench ran, because that's an extension of what's going on with the five kids that are out there on the floor. So without a doubt, right. I think you're right on the nose there, Tim.
Yeah, no, I just always think of things, you know, and I think another important part that could be, sometimes you have to, I wonder how this went. I'm sure you had to deal with this all the time. You got kids that think they should be playing more, right? You got parents that think their kids should be playing more. I think it's hard to be vague with them about, I think, playing time. I think sometimes if you have a scrimmage or you have the keep the stats among your own team when you're practicing, if there's a way to do that, to keep it. So I think you sometimes have to have proof to show, you know, I'm not playing Mary or Stevie or Joey here. Well, you know, in practice, he's really struggling and they don't know.
Yeah.
They just, so I think that's an interesting dynamic also that I don't know how I would handle. I guess when I was in college, he just told him that, you know, he didn't get into it that much. But I think that's an area that has to be addressed sometimes as a coach also.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about one more Nets coach here, Tim.
Sure.
Kenny Atkinson.
Amazing guy. Amazing. I think about this. I tried to recruit him to Siena College when I was an assistant. He showed me the recruiting letter that I sent him. So I was, you know, and so I was, he's great, incredible, upbeat, beautiful personality, did an amazing job with the Brooklyn Nets. And I'm sure he's interviewing, you know, he's with the Golden State Warriors now.
Yep.
He's interviewing for other jobs. He turned down the Charlotte Hornets job. But he's he made guys, he's great individually, and he's in fantastic shape. He can do all the moves he's talking about. He's highly energetic. One of these guys that, you know, runs 10 miles in the morning or swims, and just an amazing guy. Great teacher, great coach, great attitude, and really enjoyed knowing him to whatever degree I know these guys. I don't hang out with them, you know.
Sure.
Like, I interview them. I hang out. I say hello. I have professional distance. I'm trying to stick around. You know? I'm just trying not to tick anybody off at this stage. You know, I fly with the team. I sit in the last seat, but I say thank you.
But you're on the flight. That's the most important thing.
I'm on the flight. I can't believe it. I'm going here. I'm standing there. Just thank you. Everything's great. You know, I don't need a thing. And but I've seen a lot of coaches. Now, you just mentioned a number of coaches. That means I've survived it, you know?
Well, you must be doing something right.
Right. But you forgot. If you mind, one coach, though, that coached for 40 games was my college coach. And that was P.J. Carlissimo. He was my college coach.
Oh, wow.
Wagner College before he went to Seton Hall. And he probably was incredibly influential in me wanting to be a coach because I just thought he was the coolest guy I'd ever met. And that was huge, influential. And, again, he was a guy that was fiery on the sideline, and he was tough. Mm-hmm. So we used to that probably wore off on me also, but he was a tremendous influence on me, and he had a terrific coaching career also.
Mm-hmm. Want to know more about A Pen and a Napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes, from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. apenandanapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. Well, speaking of great coaches, at this time, Tim, we're going to throw out the John Wooden quote of the day.
Love it.
So what I'm going to do here is I'll read a quote from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, from you, give you a second to digest it, and tell me what you think, all right?
I love it.
All right. So from page 98 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, the John Wooden quote of the day is, "If I'm worrying about the other guy and what he's doing, about what he's making, about all the attention he's getting, I'm not going to be able to do what I'm capable of doing. It's a guaranteed way to make yourself miserable."
Ah, I like that. I thought it was going to go towards, you know, because he always had that quote about not scouting the other team.
Mm-hmm.
He only worried about his own team. So I thought that was where it was going. Give me the last two sentences again.
I can do that. "I'm not going to be able to do what I'm capable of doing. It's a guaranteed way to make yourself miserable."
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Comparison is the thief of joy, right?
And all absolutely.
That kind of, right? You spend a lot of time, these poor kids that growing up now, with social media and all that, and they got to see everybody's highlight tapes all the time of their day, and they think that their life isn't as good as the other person and all that kind of stuff. That's a hard thing to go through, don't you think?
Oh.
I think it's a hard world these kids live in now, man.
You and I have children approximately the same age. I've got two kids in college, one just graduated. It's a different place. It's a tough thing. And like you said, that's a quote I have used numerous times. Comparison is a thief of joy with my family, with myself.
Right.
I mean, with yourself. You battle it yourself.
Right.
You know, no matter how even keeled you try to stay, it's human instinct. And with your teams, you know, with your team, we can't worry about what West High is doing. All we can do is control our practice today at East High. And that's what we've got to stay focused on and control what we can control. If I had a nickel for every time that that I said that in my coaching career, I'd be able to afford a ticket to a Brooklyn Nets game. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, no, I know. I agree. I couldn't agree with you more. I just think philosophically, whether it be your team or how you're thinking about yourself, you try to do that as best you can. And again, I'm not saying I do it well all the time, you know, because it's like an ongoing, like all these, sometimes you make these statements or I make these statements, you're talking, that doesn't mean I do it well all the time. I just try to remind myself.
Yeah.
And I'm a lot like you. Like, I like to read read quotes, read things, read from anybody. And because I'm in the words business now,
yep.
You know, like, words matter to me. And when you hear, even for coaches, I think coaches, and I say this sometimes, like if you're watching the Bill Walton 30 for 30 or the Luckiest Man on Earth,
yeah.
He could quote every quote that John Wooden would say. And they would say, is there running up and down the floor? The kids could repeat what John Wooden would talk. Now, they were in their mind probably saying, this guy's nuts. But, you know, be quick, but don't hurry. Uh-huh. You know, don't mistake activity for achievement. Yeah. Don't all these things. And just all the different things that John Wooden would say. I'll say that that comes back to coaching because I'm in the words business right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to use good, sticky words or phrases all the time. And I think that's important as we talk to high school coaches, college coaches, or whoever right now. Is everybody in your on your program using the same language to say the same thing?
Yes.
I think that's really important. And when I say the word sticky, sticky are phrases that stay in people's brains better. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Like, are you talking about, like, does it rhyme? You know, guard your yard, right? Or is it alliteration? Is it a quick phrase, but everybody says it all the time? And you can almost hear the really good coaches here around the league at the post-game press conferences. The players repeat phrases that you hear from the coach. You know,
yep.
we needed appropriate fear tonight. We have corporate knowledge. We have they use the same. So the language with which you coach at a practice or throughout your season has to be in uniform with everybody else, right? I mean, I think that's a big coaching point also.
Yeah.
And you got it. And how can you say a lot? This is my life. How can I say a lot in a few words?
Yep.
You know, like, you gave me that long phrase and I said, comparison is a thief of joy.
Yep.
I tried to say what you said quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And cause you know, I'm on radio and the next guy saw. So, and it's good. It's cleaner to the ear. And I think when you coach, can you have your phraseology? Can it be quick? Can you have things that rhyme, alliterations, quick quotes?
Yep.
I think can be very helpful to coaches, coaching a team or broadcasters or whoever.
Yeah. You know, two guys I talked a lot about that with was, that I tried to emulate, Kevin Eastman, who was
yes.
assistant, you know, talking bullet points. Or
yes.
Rick Pitino would say 7 second corrections. If you can't
right.
correct it in 7 seconds or less than pull the kid off the floor and have an assistant talk to him, or you know, those type of things. And
right.
And
right.
I think that common language is so important. You know, Don Meyer would say
yeah.
when your players are talking like you, you know they've really bought into your program.
Yeah, it's great. I love Don Meyer. I love all these people. You're mentioning right now are all the heroes I'm always reading about all the time. I love it.
Awesome.
Kevin Eastman, I knew a little bit long time, and then he was in the NBA for a long time also.
Yeah,
so.
Awesome stuff. So, Tim, let's do this. Let's go through a rapid fire segment here. I'm just going to throw, 7-8 questions at you really quick. Tell me what you got, fire it at me and we'll go from there. All right.
You're going to do it in your auctioneer style. I'm in New York and New Jersey. And I think you talk fast when you want.
Well, I do. I'm more than 50% Italian. So I do have that a little bit in me. So.
Yeah. Okay. Great. I love it.
All right. So, rapid fire question number one. In your opinion, what NBA team do you think has the brightest future right now?
Oklahoma City Thunder.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Young, just young, talented, filling a few spots. Yeah, I didn't overthink it, but that's kind of what stands
sure.
in my mind right now.
All right. Best player in the NBA?
Jokic. Jokic.
Yep. Favorite arena to call a game outside of Barclays Center?
Madison Square Garden. I don't like to admit it because we're not supposed to like the Knicks, but the place is awesome.
Yeah. We got to go there as a family for a U2 concert when we were on vacation in New York a few years ago. So that was on my bucket list right there. Most Most misunderstood thing about the NBA.
Oh, that it's that there's not much coaching going on. There's more coaching going on in an NBA game than there are in about 10 or 15 college games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The amount of detailed coaching in an NBA game is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of coaches have said, all right, next question, but that's what I think.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's great.
I'll expound on that. The amount of
go ahead. No, I love it. I love
strategic,
it.
Strategic stuff.
Yep.
The details of what goes on. In college or in a lot of colleges, you run a system or you run your emotion and you have some plays and then you have this and it doesn't really adjust to the opponent that much.
Correct.
In an NBA game, they will just be maneuvering bodies to different parts of the floor that you don't even pick up on.
Yep.
They will be, then they do a lot of because the guys, again, it turns out to be a one-on-one play because that's why because the players are so damn good.
Mm-hmm.
But they're bringing up different guys or different ways to get a weaker defender on a great player.
Mm-hmm.
And then the defense is figuring out different ways to get their weaker defender not to have to do that.
Yeah.
There's a million of that going on. And in college or in high school, you kind of just, we'll guard, and then they run their offense, and we guard this. There's a lot of minor details that go into a pro game that people don't appreciate enough.
Yeah, well, just the hunting of matchups. And, we want to get our guy here on this spot in this situation against this dude. And then, like you said, the counter, okay, the defense sees that. So what are we going to do? Are we going to stay one-on-one? Are we going to shade him to the middle and throw our help this way? Are we going to push him baseline? Are we going to double right away? Are we going to wait till he doubles? We're going to wait till he puts it on the bounce before we double. I mean, so many different things. And this adjusts from possession to possession to possession.
Possession to possession to possession. And then you think of, okay, lineup adjustments. Okay, we're going with lineups. We're small. You just nailed it right there. There's just a whole lot of that goes on in an NBA game that is not, it might not be to the casual fan. It might just look like they're playing one-on-one bat. Now, I know the play might be one-on-one, and then they get another guy to come over and help, and the ball moves around and somebody shoots. But there was a lot of strategy that went into that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, most underrated player in the league?
Maybe Jrue Holiday.
Oh, love it. Love it. He's awesome.
Yeah. I think that was a brilliant move.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that they'll win it all. I don't want to get into all that, but I think he's underappreciated. I'm sure some others I'm thinking of, but I can't think of right now, but yep. He jumps out because I'm thinking about the finals.
Yeah. Biggest job of an NBA coach. A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that a pen and a napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin video library.
Managing the personalities of the roster, no doubt about it.
Yeah. If you could start a team with one player right now, who would it be?
Oh, Wembanyama, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the Frenchman.
Yep.
Yep, absolutely. And there's your rapid-fire segment from a pen and a napkin. How was that all right, Tim?
I survived. I survived. Rapid fire. I can handle that. I can handle that.
Let's wrap up with this last segment. Let's talk a little bit about the Nets. You know, you start out early, and boy, you came in at the right time. That's when Byron Scott gets there as a coach. Made the trade for Jason Kidd, back-to-back NBA Finals appearances. Just had to be a magic carpet ride early on in the tenure.
Yeah, my first year was the second year they went to the finals. It was unbelievable. So I went all the way to, you know, throughout the entire year, ended up losing in San Antonio. It was an amazing run, you know. And then the Nets have had a lot of down years, too. They've been bad, but it's never been bad to me. You know what I mean? Talk about fortunate. You know, you get to go watch NBA basketball, watch basketball any level.
Yeah.
Really, really, really lucky. There's, you know, it's been some good years. The move to Brooklyn has been a very good move. You know, you're still in the shadow of the Knicks. There's no doubt about that. But there is room for the Brooklyn Nets. And if they're good, and there's a real and you know, they're strong in New York, and they're really strong internationally, and the social media and all that is always one of the highest in the league and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's just been really good. Now they're in a situation, the Nets, where they have a new coach, Jordy Fernandez, who's got a fantastic reputation.
Yep.
Have a great GM, general manager, and president of basketball, Sean Marks. And, you know, they rolled the dice with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant a few years ago. Yep. Who wouldn't have done that?
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
Everybody would have done it. Now, did it work? And was there a pandemic? And was there issues all over the place? Yes. But to be able to come in to a job, this is Sean Marksham, where they didn't have any draft picks because they had given them for Paul Pierce and all that.
Yep.
And to be able to get themselves in a position to make a run and be considered a very good NBA team. Now, things did not work out, and then you got to adjust from there. But he's a brilliant guy, brilliant man, and it's kind of where they are again right now. They've got to figure out what they're going to be. You don't want to be caught in the middle in the NBA, so they've got to kind of figure out, can they maybe attract a really talented player this summer? Maybe they just kind of build for a little while, and I think they got to wait another year till they have some real good cap space so they can make some big moves. But I think the NBA has, you know, I think the players in the NBA know that Brooklyn does it the right way. It's a first-class organization, still in the, you know, coast of New York, and so it's got a lot of things to like. So I'm hoping this, you know, hoping it turns around well for the organization. I think it will. They're really, really impressive people involved. I've always been so impressed with the quality of the coaches, the assistant coaches, the trainers, all people like that. Really, it blows me away how sharp they are.
Yeah. Like I said, new coach, you know, they swung for the fences and it didn't quite work out the way that they wanted to. Gave away a lot of draft picks for James Harden, but then they got a lot of draft picks back for trading Kevin to Phoenix. You know, so they're kind of in some ways back at a place where they were when you know, at the end of the Paul Pierce.
Sure,
but
a little bit.
But they've got you know, Cam Johnson's a very nice NBA player. Mikal Bridges is very good. Cam Thomas is a scorer.
Yeah.
You know, so a little bit more to work with, but you know, it'll be interesting to see what direction the franchise goes in, and no draft picks this year. But from what people have been saying, it's not the worst draft to not have any draft picks in.
Yeah.
You know, and so you know, we'll see what direction they go.
Yeah, I just have a lot of belief. You gotta be the ownership is fantastic. We'll see how it goes. You know, it's not easy. It's not a lot of people all trying to with the same goal, and it's going to be a lot of fun. This finals is coming up right now, and going to be fun to watch, you know.
Yep.
Dallas and Boston's I think it's going to be fascinating. I think, you know, and so it's going to, I hope everybody just enjoys some NBA basketball. A lot to learn as you watch it. And I had a very good time speaking with you. This is really enjoyable.
Well, Tim, I want to thank you for your time. If folks want to know more about you, or if they want to reach out to you, how would they do that?
My email, and this is how old I am because I got an AOL email.
we were both commiserating about our lack of technology earlier today, so we had a good laugh on that.
So for the younger coaches, here's one for you, right? If you're a younger coach, TCAPSTRA, TCAPSTRAW @AOL. There's still one guy out there, man. I'm still here.
Still holding on to that account, baby. That's awesome.
So it's getting to be embarrassing, though. You know, like, I want to move. But then I'm thinking, like, I have, like, you know, bank things. I don't want to change, you know? I don't want to have to change all my stuff.
Well,
I've been doing it forever. It's hysterical.
Yep. Well, Tim, I hope you enjoyed your time on a pen and a napkin.
I had a great time. Keep doing what you're doing. It's great stuff, and I appreciate everything.
All right. Well, hey, if you can hold the line real quick, we're going to wrap up here again. Great conversation with Tim Capstra, radio color commentator for the Brooklyn Nets. A lot of really, really good stuff that you can use here. We want to thank Cosac Chiropractic, our founding sponsor. Follow us on Twitter @APenAndANapkin. Download, rate, review this. Give us 5 stars, all that fun stuff. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Go check out apenandanapkin.com. It's a really good coaching website. I like it a lot. I'm the one that made it, so I'm a little bit biased, so that is what it is. So for Tim Capstra, it's been a great afternoon. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.